Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I see that the song hasn't played, and I cannot find the song to play the opening song. So this is Karen Sindri from the Change Strategist show. And my show is all about dealing with change and how to cope with change. And change, very often, it will rock the foundation of your world. Change will have you feeling confused, anxious, depressed, and for some of you, ultimately, you will just give up. And some of you, you know that you have no clue. You don't know how to deal with the change. You don't know, you know that the change is happening to you, but you have no clue how to get there and how to navigate yourself through this change. And ultimately, every human being wants to have certainty and clarity. The problem is that our perception of what it is becomes distorted, and so therefore we just have no room for clarity at all. So today on my show, I have Anne McMaster, and Anne is someone who I met many, many years ago. I think I probably met her, I was trying to think back when, and it was in 2007, I think, or 2008, somewhere around there, when I was on one of Anne's trainings, and Anne is a senior trainer for the More to Life program, and Anne has been a huge sort of model of mine, and has been someone who has helped me in my personal development and my growth. And so who else but better not to have on my show than to have Anne on my show today. And just to tell you a little bit more about Anne, Anne's background, and she's has formal education and training, which led her to become a psychotherapist with a thriving practice. She's a licensed professional counselor, trainer, coach, and mentor. And over the years, she started leading trainings for the More to Life program and now leads trainings in 5 countries. She also led a coaching initiative that trained coaches and now coaches in 8 different time zones. So as you can see with what I've just read, is that Anne is absolutely passionate about her job and about coaching. She has also written a book, and the book is called Life Shocks Out of the Blue, as well as a blog. So today, Anne is going to be talking to us about amazing things. We're going to be learning new things. And basically, she's going to be talking about how to be true to yourself and to your relationships and how to use the power of reticular activating system to create your destiny. So welcome to my show today, Anne.
Thank you, Carl. Back in touch with you again.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And Karina just said that the audio is really horrible and that she cannot hear you. And she was wondering whether you couldn't call in to the phone number. I don't know if you can see the number at the top on the right with your phone. It's the 646-716-7979. If you could just call in through your phone, and if we could do a phone interview, if that would be all right with you?
That would be fine.
Okay, so I'll just wait for you to call in. If you've got the number, if you don't, it's up at the top there.
No, I have
there.
The number.
Okay, so just to talk a little bit about my show while Anne tries to call in, we can get a clearer connection, is that with change, very often, you know, people struggle with it. People go into chaos. People don't know what to do with themselves. And ultimately, in the end, when they go through this change in their life, they just give up. They personally just say, I cannot do this anymore. I just want to stop, and I just want to just crawl under my bed and just stay there for the rest of the time. And I remember going through that myself in 1996, I remember going through a divorce, and my ex-husband walked in the one day and just said, that's it, the relationship's over, and he packed his bags and left there and then. And for me, that was when I used the events that I was going through. Let me just have a check and see if Anne's coming through now. Just hold on, everybody. Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Okay, let me take this one down.
Is that better, Anne?
Is that
Hold on just a second.
Okay, sure. Anyway, so just to tell you a bit more. So I decided to put... Yes, I can hear you now. Is that better?
Oh, good.
Okay.
I can hear you fine.
Oh, fantastic. All right, Anne. So I was just telling people about why I decided to go on to a personal development workshop. And it was at the time in my life when I was going through a lot of trauma. I went through a divorce and my husband came home, you know, the one day and just said, that's it, I'm walking away from you, and walked out of the relationship. And immediately I was faced with this huge change. But we'll talk about that a little bit later, and a little bit later on why I chose to do a personal development course. And I couple of personal development courses and ended up with a More to Life program. So just for the listeners, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and who you are?
Well, I would say that I've always had, I'm the oldest of eight kids, so
wow.
It's like I was always mentoring on the one hand, but also one of the things that I read recently that really helped me define myself, and it was from the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, and it mm-hmm. reads, if you bring forth that which is within you, it will save your life. If you do not, mm. that which is not brought forth will destroy you.
Mm.
So it's like,
wow.
What is it that is so central to who I am that requires me to bring forth in order for me to be happy, in order for me to feel like I'm living the life that is mine and not the one that either I think I should be living or what I think you think I should be living.
Yeah.
So it's a bit scary on the one hand, but it's I found it to be that is what is fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before we get into all of that, can you tell the people a little bit more about yourself? You said you came from a family of eight and that you found yourself mentoring all the time. What has pushed you even further into what you are doing?
Well, one of the things that I have people look for in their own life is what are the themes? And I remember going in the third grade, there was a young girl in my science class who was not doing well. And so my teacher asked me if I would work with her to help her bring her science grade up. So when mm-hmm. she made an A on the next test, it was like I made an A. I made mm-hmm. an A too, but I mean, for her to make an A was more important almost than mine. I had mm-hmm. more joy in that. So it's been little incidences like that through my whole life that have kind of geared me that way. I remember when I was in graduate in school, in college the first time, I had seven different majors. Like I couldn't quite find my way. And then my husband and I adopted a 14-year-old, and I went to a therapist to make sure that I didn't over smother her or be under her enough, you know, with enough, like, discipline, if you would. I wanted to make sure she had the right amount, and I didn't know what that was because I didn't know her. So
yeah.
I went to the therapist, and I got so much out of that I decided to start taking her courses. And so then she came up to me, and she said, look, you're a natural therapist. I'd love to just train you to be a psychotherapist. And I went, well, that sounds like fun. I mean, I was kind of intimidated on the one hand because I thought, who, me? But on the other hand, it was like there was a longing that got met, a compelling when she said that. So I went ahead and did that and found that I actually do have a knack for it.
Mm,
so then I went back to school and got the proper education and got the licensing and all of that.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even know that you had adopted a 14-year-old. That is really brave.
Well, I didn't know better at the time. That also seemed like the right thing to do.
Thing to
and
do.
Truthfully, I credit my saying yes to that which opened up this whole other thing. Because one of the things I've noticed about change is you don't necessarily have to know the outcome. It's like, what does it feel compelling when you when you hear about it? And the mind can come in and say, why would I want to do that? I mean, this, I'm taking on a bundle of something that I don't even know what is.
Yeah.
That led me to the next piece, which led me to the next piece. And then in order to have my license maintained, I needed to take what they call continuing education units. So that's when I went and did the More to Life weekend. But it was really just to get CEUs. It wasn't really to learn anything for myself because, I mean, after all, I was an actualized therapist, you know. It's amazing what you don't know that you don't know. So
I learned about some
pockets that I didn't know. And I've been forever grateful because now I can teach people how to find their own pockets rather than doing one-on-one. I still do one-on-one every now and then. But really, truthfully, I'd rather teach people how to do it for themselves.
And that is what is so lovely about doing what you do is it's empowering people to do it for themselves.
Yes. It's the difference between giving a man a fish and teaching him how to fish.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. And I mean, I know with having sat in the room with you and being part of your trainings and things, it's the transformation that you see and the changes that you see in the people's lives and the choices that they've made to move forward with their lives is really, really empowering.
But it's also empowering for me because being in that energy, it's like it helps to raise the bar of my own awareness. And one of the things we say in the coaching world is beware of the coach that doesn't have a coach.
Yeah. I love that. Beware of the coach that doesn't have a coach. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember when
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I remember when I started off with my coaching, you know, I sometimes had two or three coaches coaching me, which was really, you know, amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, because if you're not growing in your own field, in your own profession, you know, it's easy to get stale. And then it becomes something that you wish you didn't have to do anymore instead of keeping it vibrant and alive.
Yes. Absolutely. And tell me a little bit about the book that you wrote, the Life Shocks book.
Okay.
And then we'll go into the nitty-gritty of what we were going to talk about in the show. But I'd like to know, I'm just curious about your book. Yeah.
Well, I was, the More to Life program is a nonprofit, and I was on the U.S. Board of Directors for that when that evolved. And one of the things in the marketing thing is they said, we need a book. And I said, and they looked at me, and I said, look, I write a blog. I don't write a book. Mm. And they said, now you're writing a book. Okay. And it was an amazing experience because I would send it to people that did not know anything about the More to Life program, and those that are very well versed in it, and people who are new to the program. And bottom line, Life Shocks is one of the fundamental, if not the fundamental, principle of the More to Life program itself, which is, you know, things that happen. And you can either be in resistance to those things that happen, or you can be in alignment with those things that happen. Mm-hmm. So part of the thing is, how do you get back into alignment when you don't like the way it is? When I don't like the way I am, when I don't like the way you are, when I don't like how it is. It's like the only one who can change my response to that is me. So I can't necessarily change you. I can change me. I can't change you, and I often cannot change how it is. But once I get the way it is and I say, okay, that is the way it is, now how do I want to participate in the way it is? But just to complain about it or bitch about it or moan about it, you know, doesn't really change anything, except I just get good at complaining and moaning. It doesn't change anything.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you just stay stuck in it.
Yes. And it becomes then a habit, and then it becomes something I'm really good at, so I'm kind of loath to give it up. Now I know
I like
to complain
that.
Really well.
I like that, where you said it becomes a habit and then you become really good at it and what you're doing, and then you loathe to give that up.
Yep.
That is really, that's just hit me right between the eyes.
Well, it's hit
you
me
see,
between the eyes many
every
times.
Every time I talk to you, there is something that just like hits me between the eyes, which is just really, really beautiful. Yeah. Wow. So, what we're going to look at today is talking about how to be true to yourself. What does that mean, Anne?
Well, it's like that quote from the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas. It's bringing forth that which is within me that is unique to me. Mm. It's not that there aren't other good therapists. It's not that there aren't other good coaches. But what I bring forth is uniquely mine. What you bring forth is uniquely yours. And what other coaches bring forth is uniquely them. And the right people tend to find us.
Sorry, I didn't hear that last thing. It broke up.
I said, so the right people tend to find us.
Yeah, okay. And how can people find it? Because I know very often when you talk to people, they're going, I'm searching, I'm searching, I'm searching, I'm searching, and they don't know where to go, and they feel lost within that.
Yeah. So normally they think the answer is outside. The answer is inside. And so one of the things that we talk a lot about in the program is looking at the three contexts within which you live. There's your relationship with yourself, your body, mind, spirit. If you're in right relationship with yourself, you are attentive to your body, you're attentive to your mind, and you're attentive to your spirit. The other context within which you live is also all of your relationships. Everybody in your family, everybody in your neighborhood, everybody at your work, everybody that you come in contact with. So there's a crossover in that boundary for some people, like a husband and wife, that in that those two contexts merge more. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so the less I know you, the easier it is often to respect your boundaries and have you respect mine, to have some mutuality. It's when we get in the people that we love the most, those are the ones that matter the most. So those are the ones we tend to expect the most from. And demand
absolutely
that they be the way we, So then there's that third context within which we also operate, which is the bigger picture. Say you and I are siblings. So there's me with my body, mind, spirit, in relationship with you, with your body, mind, spirit. So our relationship has its boundaries and its connections. And then there's a bigger picture of the family. When I work in businesses, you know, it's maybe it's other departments, and maybe the bigger picture is some sort of a project that wants to be brought to fruition. If you look at it in a bigger picture, it's like, what does life want from you? What does God want from you? What was the force want from you? Whatever you want to call that bigger picture.
You don't
get to change that.
You
get to be in alignment with it. And that's those three circles meet in like a nexus where the self and the others and the bigger picture all kind of, they overlap just a little bit. So you're always in relationship with all three of those things.
When you're looking, absolutely.
So when I'm looking at who am I, it's through those three lenses. who am I in my heart of hearts? Who am I in my relationships with others? Because they keep being my mirrors. And what is life wanting from me? What is it like crooking its little finger and saying, come on, come on, come on in, come on.
Yes, yes. Enticing you. Enticing you. Life is enticing you.
Yes. And sometimes it's a kick in the butt. And
sometimes,
you know, it's come on, come on. And sometimes it's just compelling. And sometimes it's a big kick in the butt. It's all of those things.
Yeah. Just before we carry on, and if sorry to interrupt you right there and then, but if listeners would like to call in, you can phone in on 646-716-7979, or if you want to send a message or something, you can send it through on http://tobtr.com/s/101-00719. Sorry, Anne, to interrupt you right there, but if listeners would like to call in, they're more than welcome to call in and ask you any questions. So we were busy talking about, you know, how to be true to yourself, and you were talking about the three contexts that we are in, that we live in yourself and your relationships and the bigger picture. I know very often with people when they come to you, this is a question I'm just asking, is when they come to you and or in the workshop situation, when people are in a state of confusion and they don't know who they are anymore, would you say that all three of those are out of sync?
Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. The more out of sync they feel with themselves, the more likely it is to be all three. Mm-hmm. But the main one to get right is my connection with my body, mind, spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do people do that?
Well, with the body, it's like my diet, exercise, and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamental, absolutely basic things. And if I'm not handling the basic things about myself, it's more difficult to handle the more refined things. Handle the basic things, body, mind, spirit. Well, with the body, it's diet, exercise, sleep. With the mind, it's processing, journaling, you know, making sure that you understand how to discern what is real and what is your mind making up. And that's one of the major tools we teach in the More to Life program, is how do you distinguish between what your mind assumes or concludes or has opinions and judgments about and what is actually really real.
Yeah.
And the fundamental principle of that is, if I feel connected and open and real, I'm telling the truth. If I feel bitter, upset, pissed off, angry, hurt, sad, depressed, any of those, I'm lying to myself, because if I told the truth, I'd be free. It's that simple. It's just not necessarily so easy.
Yeah, well, I feel like I'm putting on the More to Life training. I'm loving it. I'm having a refresh course.
Well, that's what I do in my coaching as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, really is something that is just, like you said, it's so simple, and going back to the basics, because I think as human beings, we naturally tend to overcomplicate things.
Yeah, well, fundamentally, we have a choice between, are we going to follow the spiritual part or are we going to follow the ego part? And the ego part is always about separation. And I'm either thinking I'm worse than everybody or I'm better than everybody.
Yeah.
Either way, I separate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas the spiritual part would honor who I am and honor who you are.
And I really like that, where you said the spiritual part will honor who you are and honor who you are. as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that is really beautiful. So just to move on a little bit more is you mentioned the reticular activating system. Could you tell the listeners a little bit more about that and what that is?
It's one of my favorite topics.
Yay! Now I've got you going.
The reason is because it's so important. The reticular activating system, which I also call the RAS, R-A-S, reticular activating system, it's a function in your brain that governs lots of different things. One of them is it has impact on your sleep. It has impact on your balance. It has impact on lots of different things. The main thing that I'm interested in is that it has impact on your ability to tune out those things that are non-essential to what you're focused on in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And like in the book I was talking about, there's this very busy game room. It's huge. But I was on a mission to go to the Apple Store, and this game room is right on my right, and it's almost, I don't know, maybe 100 feet long, 100 yards long, I'm at it. So I don't even hear anything. My mind tunes that completely out because I'm on a mission.
Mm.
It's the same thing when you're in a conversation in a restaurant. You can block out all the background noise because you're so involved in what you're saying with that person.
And that's incredibly powerful.
It is very powerful. How it works in a negative way is that if I'm convinced that, you know, I'm, you know, not a good person or a bad mother or a bad wife or a bad person, bad sister, bad whatever, or I'm not as good as other people, my mind will focus on that. And it will see all the ways that I'm not as good as other people. It like focuses on those things that are germane to my point of view. The upside of it is, if I say, okay, that I want to create, something powerful in my life, I have a vision of a relationship, or I have a vision of health, or I have a vision of being at home inside myself, and I hold that vision, then I will start, the doors will open that I can, it's like I recognize the doors that are there, that open that way.
Yeah, and I can relate to that in that I remember, 2003, I think it was, we were trying to fall pregnant and have a baby, obviously. And I remember going to acupuncture and lying in the room and, you know, the needles went in and the acupuncturist said, go to sleep. So I went to sleep. But when she came back and woke us up, because David was with me, my husband was with me, and he was also having the acupuncture at the same time, I woke up and I said to him, we're having a baby. And I said, I could actually see it. I could see it. I could feel it in my womb and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And two weeks later, pregnant.
Yes.
It was incredibly, incredibly powerful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the RAS?
And the secret is that what determines which vision that you focus on is what your feelings are. It's like if you're scared, it will focus on the negative visions. But you weren't scared. You were feeling the baby. You were seeing it. You were feeling what it would like to be a mother. And those feelings are what generated the open doors. And I'm not saying this is 100% because there's always the mystery of the universe at work here.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, it's. I've experienced this quite a few times where that kind of has happened, where I have created the intention, and the intention has been so powerful that it has it has happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But might not necessarily have happened straight away, but it happened over the years or so on, and that's where I find doing vision boards are so incredibly powerful.
Yes. Very. vision boards, any visions that you hold in your head. I looked back on previous vision boards and I thought, wow, I didn't really know what that meant when I put it on my vision board. I just felt compelled to put it on my vision board. And then later, a year or two later, I look back and I think, oh, so that's what that was about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got mine up in my study. I do one every year in January. I do a vision board, and these are things that I'm wanting, that I want to manifest and want to create in my life. And when I look back at them, I've got 3 years of them, 4 years up on my wall now, and I look back and I think, wow, I didn't even it's there, but it's actually happened. Like there was one that I did with, it was all books and then up on a pile of books. And I didn't realize why I actually put this pile of books up there. And looking back at it last year, I thought, wow, that was me writing my book, you know, and putting that out there. So that's the power of the rest. Is that part of it as well?
Yes, that's exactly it. I did the same thing on one of my vision boards. I had a books, and somebody was signing books, you know, book signing party. And then here I was, I guess 2 years later, I was signing books. Like, wow.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah,
and
incredibly.
I was going to show how it works the other way. I was doing some downhill mountain biking, and there was a hairpin turn, a U-turn. And this was my first time to go mountain biking. And so you know, you're going down pretty fast when you're going down a huge mountain in Colorado. Anyway, I saw this hairpin. In the middle of this hairpin turn was all these brambles and stickery bushes. And, you know, I thought, don't go there, don't go there, don't go there. Don't go there. Guess where I went?
Yeah, you went there.
I went there. So it was a big lesson for me to keep my eye on my forward progress, on where I want to go and not where I don't want to go.
Yes, yes. And that's what I so love
about
coaching. Yeah. And that is exactly what we do as coaches is teaching our clients how to go where they want to go, not where they don't want to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I was working with a woman the other day, and I was trying to get we had found what she wanted, but she kept going back to what she didn't want and how her behavior wasn't working for her. And I said, you keep going back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's stay on purpose with how are you going to create this instead of go over and over the same story about how it didn't work, how what she was doing wasn't working. So it's like, yes, that's not just her. That's all of us. And our mind gets caught in that loop.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where it leads me on to the next thing that I'd like to talk about is about turning walls into boundaries. How do you do that? I mean, I love that, how to turn walls into boundaries. What do you mean by that?
Well, let's imagine a relationship. And you have done something that you know is a button for me. And so I have this little resentment that goes in place about how you shouldn't push my buttons. You know what my buttons are. You know that irritates me. Why are you doing it? So then I'll get even with you by doing something I know you don't want me to do, or by not doing something you want me to do. So it becomes a wall, and we start getting more and more separate, 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 separate. Pretty soon, I don't even know why I'm in this relationship with you. It was a bad mistake. I should have known better, blah, blah, blah. But when it's like the fifth or sixth person who treats me the same way, and I'm the only common denominator in all of these relationships that don't go well, you know, maybe I have a part to play in that. How is it that I turn a relationship into a wall, a distancing? So boundaries are when I'm very, you It's like, I don't know, I have a boundary. For instance, I had this friend of mine who was going to pick me up at the airport. She was 45 minutes late. I was coming from international. I was jet lagged, tired, been up for way too long, sitting in a tiny little miserable seat, eating food that I wouldn't normally eat. And so I was loaded for bear. One of the things I didn't tell her was that I have a big bug about not standing outside in the heat in Houston for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So she didn't know that was a boundary for me. She just assumed I'd be going through, take a long time to go through all the, you know, customs and all that. Mm. And that I would be in air conditioning. And so the point being is, she didn't know that was a button for me. I didn't know it was a button for me until she crossed that boundary.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do I take back my button when she doesn't know?
Mm.
And this was a real good friend of mine.
Mm.
So it happens in relationships. It happens with mothers and daughters and husbands and wives and fathers and daughters and everybody, bosses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Direct reports. It's like, I demand that you behave in a way that makes my life easy. And if you don't, I will pay you back.
And I mean, if you don't communicate your boundaries, then people don't know what your boundaries are.
Or if you say, this is my boundary, and then you don't do anything about it when they cross it. When I've worked with people who have been abused, you know, they say, don't hit me, but they have no consequence for it, or they don't say it in a way that has any authority to it. So the boundary is just lip service. It's not really real. So it's a combination of how do you make that boundary real on the one hand with a consequence, and how do you keep adjusting those boundaries so that they don't turn into walls? Boundaries are pushable. Some of them are not. Like, you do not have permission to hit me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And there's a consequence for that if you do.
Yeah. And this is the thing where it leads back to that if you do not have that consequence, or if you let people, you know, tread on you and go over your boundary and there's no consequence, you're not being true to yourself.
That's the big point. You know, it's like anytime I've worked with people, it's like I didn't tune into this one until around in my middle 40s. There was this guy in my office that was really arrogant. And he just got up my nose. Every day he would do something that was just so arrogant. And so when I was doing my personal work about it, I thought, you know, peace of mind talk I had was, I may be arrogant, but I'm not as arrogant as he is. So he was in living color playing out a facet of myself I didn't like. And was unforgiving of. So if I can be forgiving of my arrogance so that I can get off of it and not pretend I'm better than anybody, because we're all honorable. If I be forgiving of myself, it's easier for me to be forgiving of you. It's just not a button anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why relationships are just so fascinating.
They are. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Everything I don't like about you is something that I'm unforgiving of in me. I just have to find what the right thing is.
Yeah. It might not be exactly that, exactly the same thing, but it might be something similar.
Yeah. Well, it's like if I can get to the right wording, it's like the thing that's underneath the thing is the thing that hooks me. It's like a knee-jerk reaction. And I can usually figure it out if I say, who else does that I don't like?
Yeah.
I don't like that behavior. I'll find a whole slew of people. And here's the real killer. they may not even really be like that.
Mm.
But it's my projection.
Yes. And your perception, yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's so big inside me. It's the lens through which I look. So I see it out there, even when it's not there. How many times have we thought somebody meant something when they didn't actually have that in mind at all?
Yeah.
You know?
And I can so identify with that, and I'm sure that the listeners who are listening can identify with that too. And if the listeners would like to call in, the number is 646-716-7979. If you have any questions for Anne, I'm sure she's more than happy to answer any of those questions. And I can so identify with that. I mean, it's very often we look at life through tinted glasses, and you know, we have our own sort of projections of what we perceive and how we see things that we'd and then very often the people, if I use the word judge us for the way that we say things or do things, but it's not actually the way that you meant it. So there's this whole miscommunication.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, the only way I can see you is through the lens through which my eyes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which is tainted by my, my experiences in my life, the ones that were healthy and real and the ones that were traumatic and hard.
Yeah. And all these events are what have been part and parcel of who you are. And the great thing is that you can release some of those events that you don't really want, that you can let go of them.
Yeah. Well, you don't really let go of the event. You let go of the perception that
the
was
perception.
Often inaccurate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
The mind
is amazing.
Absolutely.
And the reactive mind cannot stand not knowing. So it's always making stuff up about, me, about you, about how it is. And my job, it's sort of like, when you do a brainstorm in a business setting, it's like you don't judge what comes out. You just throw things up on the wall and you see what sticks. Well, the mind is like that. Its job is to try to figure it out. The problem is some of the stuff it figures out is off. tainted by experiences where I decided that, no matter what I do, I'm never going to be enough. Or, I'm always going to be the last one chosen. Or, fat, stupid, and ugly are always people's, there's some core favorites there.
Yes. So you start creating all these beliefs around yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that taints what you think you can have, what you think you can create. But it also makes very muddy that which is within you that wants to be brought forth, because that other stuff is just junk.
It's just stuff.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it made sense when you were 5, or it made sense when you were 15, but in real reality, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do I separate out the nonsense from the sense? Even though my nonsense sounds real.
Yeah. And it also sounds real to you because it's something that you have, lived with and created and added to it. So it actually becomes part of who you are and then becomes real.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I've heard it over and over and then I just bought it.
Yes. Yes.
So when I first started doing trainings in South Africa, one of the things I did not know was that it was considered a sign of disrespect for a black woman to look a man in the eyes.
Yes.
Well, I didn't have that in my awareness at all. I didn't know about it. So I'm around, I'm coaching people. They're sitting in front of each other, men and women, women and women, and men, all mixed up. And I'm just encouraging them to connect, you know.
Oh, my word. Yes.
No clue how hard it was for the men and worse for the women.
Yes. And so, also for a younger person to look an older person in the eyes as well. That's also
exactly.
Part of it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there was such separation.
So, sure, what an experience.
And that was in 1990. So now here it is, 2017. I don't think that's an issue anymore. Not since I've been, I still go back to Africa on a very regular basis. And I don't see that as an issue now. And I may be wrong.
It definitely has changed. Yeah.
Yes. It may be more so in the sticks, you know, out in the bush, but
rural,
not so much in the city. Yes.
Yeah, very much so. So just to move on a little bit, I see that there's a simple tool that you have for looking at your life from a helicopter point of view. Would you like to share that with the listeners, what that tool is?
Yeah, well, that's looking at the self, my body, mind, spirit, looking at my relationship, and looking at my... you know, where do I sit? Like, I'm a white woman in the States, born in the war, and back when it was a very different world. So that has an imprint on me from an age point of view. And yet I'm in a society where I don't have to go through what some women go through in other cultures. So it's like there's that piece. And then I have my, you know, I was a child of the 60s where peace, love, dope sex, you know.
States
where the anti-disestablishmentarianism. And while I wasn't really that much of a rebel, I didn't get into all of that much. It was still an imprint.
Yeah.
You know, about more less division between the people who decide things and the people who are being decided for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like all of that is part of my makeup. And then I also have all of this New Age stuff that I went through as well. You know, I didn't get big into the women's movement, but it still had an effect on me.
Yeah, and
so
it's just so
it's
lovely.
Like,
sorry, so now it's like?
So
go
now
ahead,
it's like here I am in 2017. What's the culture now? And what's my part to play in it now, given that I've been affected by all these things? How do I bring forth that which is within me to make the impact at this point in my life that is exclusive to all those other imprints?
Yeah. And it's very much the environment, you know, it's the environment changes. And so, like you said, over the time, so in the 60s, it was like this, in the 80s, it was like that, and in the 2000s, it was like this. And so your environment changes. And so it's about what do you bring within you that now, you know, adapts to those changes and looks at it in a different way. Because I think if you stay stuck in the 60s, it's going to be sheer hell being in 2017.
Well, you know, people who've been stuck with the glory days of high school or the glory days of college or whatever, and it's like they never really move past that.
Yeah.
Change is inevitable. It is relentless. You have no charge in what happens, only in how you accept it or resist it.
So, and that's it. I mean, that's why the reason why I wrote this book is that I wrote my book, you know, After the Shock, How to Make Peace with Change, is that change is there. It's with us 24/7. You know, I mean, we walk out the door and it's change. I mean, the minute you wake up in the morning, it's change. It's a new day. It's something different. So it's there with us all the time. And it's absolute choice of what you are going to do with that change and how you're going to handle it. it, be it a small change mm-hmm. or a big change. Yeah.
And there's also always the personal evolution. When, mm-hmm. you know, the baby goes from being newborn to 5 years old, those massive changes. So we still go through massive changes, but normally on a more subtle level. Like mm-hmm. if we're not growing, if we're not learning, if we're not staying current with who we are, and that's where the spiritual part takes place as well. Am I journaling? Am I meditating? Am I being in nature? Am I doing those things that feed me at a different level?
Yeah, yeah. And that, I mean, that is just so important. Like you said, you know, if you are not growing with the change that is happening within you, then it's like stagnant. It's like a river that's not moving. It's like, and then all that stuff that grows on that river just festers and gets worse and worse and worse. It's like I said to someone, I use the analogy of putting a backpack on your back and putting fruit in your backpack when you're going out for a hike, but you don't take that fruit out. And then the fruit festers and goes yucky and gungy and, you know, moldy and whatever, and you're not removing that fruit. That's the same thing yeah. that happens if when you are dealing with things in your life or change happens and you do not move with it, is that it festers yeah. and it gets yucky, and you need to actually take that fruit and throw it out of your backpack and put in new fruit, fresh fruit. Go out in nature. Have fun.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's also the parable of the frog. If you put a frog in cold, in hot water, he'll jump out.
Yeah.
But if you put a pot in cold water and then turn the heat up, they'll stay in that water as they adjust to the temperature over and over and over until they're dead.
Dead, yeah, yeah. And yeah. I love that too, because that's exactly the same thing, yeah.
Yep, exactly. And so those little subtle changes take place if we're not aware of them, if we don't stay awake to our own subtle changes, we don't see those doors that are open, that are compelling, that are soul satisfying, if we say yes to those doors. Those are the ones that connect. If we say yes to all those other doors, that we just get better at being depressed or sad or hurt or angry or upset or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. It's like when I was chatting to you the other day, and it's about saying yes to yourself and not saying no to yourself, which is I won't forget that as long as I live.
Yeah.
I mean, which is what you said to me the other day, and that is what is so important is that for your own personal growth to happen and to move forward is to say yes to yourself, but also remain true to yourself at the same time.
But it's also saying yes to disciplines. It's not like I want to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it. That's
yes.
not really saying yes to yourself. That's saying yes to your indulgence. I want to.
Yes.
That's like a two-year-old. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. Well,
yes.
that's not really who you are. That's not your essence. That's that's like get out of jail free card for anything. And there's a consequence I pay for that. So how do I keep myself lined up in a discipline that does hone? Disciplines are so good because they hone who I am. When I go to the CrossFit box, you know, there's disciplines there that really, if you pay attention to your body, you don't pass what your limits are, but you don't like do the same weight over and over and over again. It's like you want to, you keep stretching little bit by little bit. But it's the same way about anything. You tell a little bit more truth.
Yeah. And I love that. I love the way I'm interrupting. No, just what I'm about to say. Yeah. We can talk so much and we're talking across each other. Sorry, you were saying.
I just say, you know, tell the people you love a little bit more, how much more you love them. You know, it's a little bit deeper. It's a little bit more kind, a little bit more solicitous, a little bit more firm with your boundaries, a little bit more real.
It's
amazing.
Yeah. And it is. And when you do that, I mean, I remember in one of the trainings, someone saying to me, saying to one of the people on the training is to soften, keep your heart soft. I don't know whether that's something that you said or somebody else from the Mortal Life training is about keeping your heart soft. So it's about letting in and not creating that wall, but still having your boundaries.
It's about letting love in and love out.
Out.
The more, you do one, it helps the other. Yes, it's an organ that pumps blood in and pumps blood out. Love in, love out.
And I love that. And I've got this picture of this heart, you know, the pumping in and pumping out, and it's about that. Exactly. And I mean, the heart is the seat of love, and, well, the whole body is, but that's what people perceive the heart as being the seat of love. And so it's, you know, I can just see that, you know, love in, love out, and it's pumping in, pumping out, pumping in, pumping out.
Yeah.
And that's also is the essence of who we are. And very often people, and I'm generalizing here, is people harden themselves, you know, with that. So that they protect themselves because they don't want to be hurt.
Exactly. Yeah, but the heart is meant to be cracked open over and over and over and over again. It just expands. It's not meant to go small.
I like that too. I mean, the heart is meant to be cracked open so that it expands. It's not meant to be small. That is really beautiful. Wow. And I'm really conscious of the time, and we just have a very little bit of time left over. Is there one special thing that you'd like to share with the listeners before I close off our show?
Well, I would say is, I think it's everybody's mission in life to bring forth that which is uniquely in them to bring forth. Not bringing it forth is like a life not lived fully. That's our job. Our life.
Beautiful. So I'd just like to
thank you,
and thank you so much for being on my show. It's just been an absolute privilege and an honor, and it's just been so special having you here and chatting to you, and for sharing such wise words, and just, I'm just an absolute awe of you. And if people would like to get hold of Anne, you can go onto a website. It's Anne, A-N-N, McMaster, MCMASTER.com, and her book is available on the website as well. Or you can email Anne on Anne McMaster, ANNMCMASTER3@gmail.com. And this is Corinne Sindri from the Change Strategist Show. And to end off with my show, I'd like to end off with a quote, which is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make yourself something else is the greatest accomplishment. So, Anne, thank you very much, and hope to chat again with you soon. And I'm sure we'll catch up after the show just to have a quick chat. And wishing you all the best and lots of love. Thank you.
And thank you, Karen. Thank you, Karen.
Pleasure. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I can do anything, I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want, I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.